Hey, we're really happy to have Paula Johnson joining us. And Paula is a curator, is the curator at the National Museum of American History in Washington for a new exhibit called Food, Transforming the American Table. And Paula is also a native Minnesotan, so it's nice to have a Minnesotan here on our show. Paula, I want to welcome you to the Roadhouse.
Hello. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure for me to talk to you as well.
Now, are you working today or you have the weekend off?
I did work a little bit today, but at the moment I'm at home. So
okay, good.
Yeah.
Once again, we want to thank you for giving us your time on Thanksgiving weekend. But this exhibit, Food, about food, just opened, so it's brand new. Wasn't it November 20th?
Yes, just a few days ago. And that's why I was working today, because, you know, you do something like this and spend several years working on it, and then it opens and you can't stay away. So I went into the museum. This is one of our busiest times of year, Thanksgiving weekend. And
really?
There were a lot of people in there. Yep, yep.
Well, it seems appropriate to be talking about food because I think we're all experts on food after yesterday.
Exactly, exactly. Is there a topic that's more universal and essential than food?
That's right. You know, for me personally, it's... it was interesting to read about this exhibit. I believe it was in the Minneapolis papers where I saw it before we contacted you, because I had just been on a little bike trip down in the South and northern Mississippi. I went through there, and some of the little restaurants there reminded me of the 50s and 60s. Of walking into a restaurant during that era, and also kind of spark that thought about what enormous changes there have been since during that whole time. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that's basically what the exhibit covers.
That is right. The key word, other than food, is transforming. I mean, this exhibition is all about some of the major changes in food and eating in America. Between 1950 and 2000, that 50-year time period is kind of what we're focusing on. And then we also examine some of the forces and the factors that influence those changes.
Was World War II, or the ending of World War II, was that a major a part of that whole change?
Yeah, in lots of ways. I mean, there were technologies that were developed for the war that later on became adapted to domestic use, and, for example, the microwave and the microwave oven. So we look at some of those things. But there was also the fact that after the Great Depression and after the deprivations of the Depression and World War II, that there was really this push for creating an abundant and affordable food supply in America. And that really was what the 1950s were all about, was figuring out how to make sure we had enough food. And so there were big changes in food production and processing and all of those things, and distribution, of course.
Was another part of that might have been our eyes opening to the rest of the world due to a war of that nature?
Mm-hmm. Well, and also you're absolutely right that World War II did take a lot of people to other corners of the world, and you know, there were things, for example, the wine and the importance of wine for the table in some of the European countries, and you know, even the influence of sort of seeing a different kind of lifestyle in the Pacific and how that gets translated into backyard and suburban living in the post-war period. Those were absolutely some of the changes that we explore in the exhibition. Of course, there are also other changes brought by the other conflicts in the world during this period. And so we have the arrival of many immigrants from Asia and the Middle East, Africa, Central America, and the influence of those foods and flavors from those areas on American cuisine and the American diet.
What I remember from back in the 50s and 60s, walking into a restaurant, It was pretty American. I mean, it was like hamburger steak and, you know, there'd be some kind of peas and gravy and mm-hmm. I'm not sure what all, but those are things that have disappeared more or less, and they're replaced by, you know, tacos and mm-hmm. and cuisine from all around the world.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely true, although now, you know, things like mashed potatoes and gravy and some of those macaroni and cheese, some of those things from our childhood in the mm-hmm. 50s and 60s, you know, really are now kind of making a comeback, you know, as comfort food, as regional cuisine. I mean, Minnesota hot dishes, of course, are, you know, making a comeback in certain areas because they do represent this regional and kind of comfort food that people still need.
Now, how do you show these ideas in your exhibit? How do you get those across?
Yeah, that's a good question. We actually work as a team. This is an intensely collaborative effort. And so I am the project director and one of four curators on the show. And we also then have educators and designers and, you know, a lot of people kind of working to make sure that we convey the nugget of these stories. And, of course, being a museum, we have to work with artifacts. And the Smithsonian collections, of course, are vast. But it's interesting that for this particular topic and this time period, we actually had to do some collecting. We didn't have some of the objects that were really key, like, for example, a Weber kettle grill. You know, everybody was grilling on those Webers, and we didn't have a Weber grill. We didn't have a hibachi. We didn't have some of the on-the-go convenience food packaging, go cups. That kind of stuff, you know, which is kind of like everyday life, but we just didn't have enough of that to draw upon. So it's really a matter of thinking in terms of material culture and the stories and the documents and photographs, and then kind of putting them together in a way that can really convey a complicated idea pretty quickly, because, you know, this isn't a book on the wall.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we really have to make sure that we have these artifacts that are going to draw people in and then help tell stories. So you're right. It is a complicated thing to do, but it's rewarding. I was in there today, and, gosh, seeing these areas where we have these artifacts set up along with some images, you know, people were really studying them, and what's great is that they were having lots of conversations because, of course, this is a universal topic. Everybody eats. Everybody has some of this experience, and this time frame really resonates with a lot of Americans. It was just great to sort of overhear some conversations among people because, you know, they get inspired or they see something from their childhood and, you know, want to talk about it.
Now, one of the things that was really you know, a winner as far as what you should do in a history of food is bringing Julia Childs into play in this and getting a hold of her kitchen and making that a cornerstone of the display.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've had Julia Childs' kitchen, her home kitchen from Cambridge, Massachusetts. We collected that in 2001 when she announced that she was moving back to her home state of California. So three of us went up to Cambridge and talked to her about what were her plans, you know, for all of her things. And after, just a few minutes, the three of us kind of looked at each other and we all had the same thought of, oh, gosh, wouldn't it be great to collect everything here? Because this kitchen looks so homey and comfortable, but it is serious stuff in there. You know, she just had, you know, a array of tools and equipment that really spanned this time period. There were things there from 1948 when she was a student in Paris all the way up to 2001, or right before she left. So we packed up the kitchen, brought it to Washington, did all of our cataloging and all of that stuff, and set the kitchen up in a gallery. And, you know, it was an exhibit that was supposed to be up for about 6 months. And it turned into something that was extremely popular. And it was up for 10 years.
Wow.
So earlier this year, we had to move it to this larger gallery. And this was our chance to put the story of Julia Child in the larger context of American history, American culinary and food history in the last half of the 20th century.
I went to, I went to your website, or one of your websites today, and I was able to go through item by item, 66 different items that she has in her kitchen.
Yeah.
And I saw some surprising things in there. She's everything from some very basic things to, you know, just the technological things that we may have in our kitchens.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, she was, trained at the Cordon Bleu and was a self-confessed gadget freak. When she and her husband were living abroad, first in Paris and then Marseille and then in Germany and then in Norway, she went to stores and flea markets and all over the place looking for tools and equipment and the things that people actually use. And so her kitchen contains these wonderful things from that era and from Europe. But then she continued throughout her career. She was on television for many years, and even the last three of her television shows were filmed in this actual kitchen. So there were a lot of tools that people might be familiar with because they could see them, you know, on her television show. But she was all about getting the job done. And so while she was trained, you know, the classical techniques, and she really appreciated all that handwork and that skill, man, you know, as soon as the food processor came out and she tried it and it worked, she said she never turned back. So she, you know, she was an early adopter, and if something worked, she embraced it and moved on, which is just wonderful because, it speaks to, you know, how, you know, what a wonderful cook she was, but also a great teacher.
You know, when I think about the changes in these 50 years, that I also think about changes in society that had a major effects on how things were done in the kitchen and what we eat. And one of the main changes, of course, is that in married life now, both people are out there working. It's the end of the housewife era, although that doesn't mean there aren't many women who are able to stay home and take care of their children and But overall, it's that job has passed now to both halves of married life.
Sure, yeah. The who's in the kitchen has changed, and you know who is making the meals, how people are integrating convenience foods, how supermarkets are making sort of gourmet meals to go, and so it feels like fresh and homemade, but, it was made by, your local supermarket. There are all of these changes that do reflect the social and cultural changes that we all experienced. The demographic changes, the work patterns, the family structures, all of that is reflected in, how and what we eat.
And then, of course, all the immigrations that have happened just one after another from different problem areas and areas that weren't problems in the world to the U.S. has introduced a lot of new flavors, a lot of new foods and things that we don't think about anymore. We just take those for granted, I believe.
I know, we do. I mean, things like, when I was growing up in Minnesota, we didn't have, pita bread and naan.
Sure.
And cardamom and cilantro, all of these different breads and spices that now are just a part of really the mainstream. That's a huge change.
Mm-hmm. What I was thinking of is it would be great in my mind, of course, not in yours, but to have a little restaurant in your exhibit that was straight from like 1954 in Midwest Minnesota. I believe most people would be amazed at how things have changed.
Yeah.
If they could walk back in time. And then next door have a group of ethnic dishes in a newer style. It's just, it, it would be a big surprise for most folks, but
yeah.
I'm sure they'll get that idea from your exhibit. Whereabouts can they find on the web? Can they look at what it looks like? Not everybody can fly to Washington.
Yeah, that's too bad, because it was a beautiful day out here. I was listening to your weather forecast, and you're very cold out there. But today was 60 degrees here, a lovely day on the Mall.
Oh, don't tell us that.
I'm sorry. but you know what? We are a little bit behind on developing our website, but people can go to our main museum website. It's American History, one word, AmericanHistory.si.edu. And then there's a link to the food page. We're going to be building that. It's actually under construction right now. So, you know, check back in December, and hopefully we'll have more of the material up on the web.
Yeah, I think I just Googled food transforming the American table, and it popped right up. So
we
were able to find it.
And
yeah, see a lot of the interesting things pop in, and go look at Julia Child's kitchen.
Yeah.
And every little item, too.
1,200 of them we collected, and there are about 900 in the kitchen itself, in the exhibition. And then in the rest of the show, there's another about 300 objects. So there's plenty to see. And then there's a big communal table in the center of the gallery with seats for 18 people. And that's where we welcome anybody who wants to sit down and have a conversation about change, about food, about that 1954 restaurant in the Midwest that you're thinking about.
Well, I'll have to come out there and see if you've got it open soon.
Okay.
You know, my co-host, Ann Passas, has a question for you as well.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Paula, thanks for joining us tonight. Hi. Say, I had a question. This Buck kind of brought this up, but are there going to be any tie-ins in the museum cafeteria to your exhibit? That would be fun.
We have had a lot of tie-ins. In fact, it was the centennial of Julia Child's birthday on August 15th this year, and our chef did a tasting table. Oh, my gosh. It was amazing, wonderful things from her mastering the art of French cooking. And we've had a number of other chef's tables leading up to the opening of this show. We are working very closely with the guys in the cafeteria to, you know, to do some of these explorations. And we're also developing a series of programs that will be, you know, at the museum and will involve food and wine and, you know, thought.
That's great.
To do. Yeah.
Well, those restaurants and cafeterias are always such a nice place to take a little break and rest your feet and talk about what you've seen and then rest up and look at more.
Exactly, because you really do need to have, you know, get your strength, because the Smithsonian is a huge place.
Mm-hmm.
So,
thank you.
You're very welcome.
We've been speaking with Paula Johnson. She's the curator at the National Museum of American History, the Smithsonian. And her exhibit is called Food Transforming the American Table, 1950 to 2000. Paula, we want to thank you so much for joining us here on mostly your day off.
And it's my pleasure.
Great. I'll be out there sometime next spring, and I'll be expecting a 1954 restaurant.
Give me a call when you come.
Okay.
Please do. Okay.
Thank you very much, Paula.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.